Für alle ein Fest. Zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Volvic Naturell. 1,5 Liter für nur 49 Cent. Zuzüglich Pfand. Oder Almare Räucherlachs XXL. 220 Gramm für nur 3,49 Euro. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Stu does America.
Super excited for tonight's show. We got legendary comedian and actor Jay Johnston on to address his pardon for January 6th. It's going to be interesting. I got a ton to ask him about. But we're also going to start off by doing the harsh reality about Ukraine. And it's, look, this is where we are. This is a harsh reality, and no one likes it. No one's happy about it. But we're trying to work through it. And there's a new approach here. Trump says his call with Vladimir Putin is the beginning of Ukraine peace negotiations. Let me give you his statements, because these are very important. This is what Trump said. I just had a lengthy and highly productive phone call with President Vladimir Putin of Russia. We discussed Ukraine, the Middle East, energy, artificial intelligence, the power of the dollar, various other subjects. We both reflected on our great history, working together in World War II, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We both agreed we want to stop millions of deaths taking place in the war with Russia and Ukraine. President Putin even used my very strong campaign motto of common sense. We both do believe very strongly in it. Now, of course, I don't know if that's actually true with Vladimir Putin. But again, as we talked about yesterday, these are negotiations. He's saying these things for a reason. We've also agreed to have our respective teams start negotiations immediately. And we will begin by calling President Zelensky of Ukraine to inform him of the conversation, something which I will be doing right now. I've asked Marco Rubio and John Ratcliffe and Michael Waltz and Steve Witkoff to lead the negotiations, which I feel strongly will be successful. Millions of people have died. I don't know if it's millions, but it's a lot, have died in a war that would not have happened if I were president. But if it did happen, but it did happen, so it must end. No more lives should be lost. I want to thank President Putin for his time and effort with respect to this call and for the release yesterday of Mark Fogel, a wonderful man that I personally greeted last night at the White House. I believe this effort will lead to a successful conclusion, hopefully soon. Now, the media freaks out of that because I can't believe he's calling Vladimir Putin. He's not even calling Zelensky. Now, of course, he did call Zelensky, and he's talked about that as well. I just spoke to Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine. Conversation went very well. He, like President Putin, wants to make peace. We discussed a variety of topics having to do with the war, but mostly the meeting that is being set up on Friday in Munich, where J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio will lead the delegation. I'm hopeful that the results of that meeting will be positive. It is time to stop this ridiculous war, where there has been massive and totally unnecessary death and destruction. God bless the people of Russia and Ukraine. Now, of course, there's been some criticism of this approach, as you might imagine. It's Donald Trump, so that's like required. One of the bluntest reactions came from EU foreign policy chief Kaja Kallas, who questioned why the U.S. administration was giving Russia everything they asked for, even before negotiations. It's appeasement. It has never worked, she said. It is clear that any deal behind our backs will not work. Any agreement will need also Ukraine and Europe being part of it. Now, of course, Ukraine is part of it. This is not a deal being done behind their back, at least. Maybe it's behind this one person's back. I'm not sure. For his part, Zelensky initially reacted to the news about the call by trying to assuage concerns that Ukraine had been sidelined and praised his subsequent conversation with Trump as long and detailed. Now, look, it's a tough situation for Vladimir Zelensky. He can't anger, the United States, because it's the only reason that the country is still standing right now is you and I. Congratulations. You've been able to donate much of your tax dollars to that particular effort. And it has been successful in at least stopping Russia's advance. That is a big deal. Of course, it's not just us. Ukraine has fought valiantly in many cases to protect their borders. And, as I said many, many times, this war began with Russia invading. That's what happened. And that's all true. I understand if I was Ukrainian, if I was Zelensky, if I was just some random citizen in Ukraine, how pissed off I would be about this and how I'd want all my territory back. Going back to 2014, I get that. I understand it. I really do. However, this is America. And our job is not, in fact, to give Ukraine everything that they want. It's not even to make fairness occur throughout the globe. Our job is to do the best thing to avoid nuclear war so that everybody doesn't die. That's kind of where our position is right now. And you can't do that with unlimited, gifts to the opponent, as they point out, truthfully. The sort of appeasement effort would never work. But that's not necessarily what this is, because clearly in this effort, we're not talking about Russia getting everything they want either. We're talking about both sides being angry about the outcome. That's what we're looking for here. Now, Pete Hegseth, the new Secretary of Defense, has been criticized by what he said publicly. And I want to play this whole thing for you because it is crucially important as to where this sort of sets the debate. Watch.
We want, like you, a sovereign and prosperous Ukraine. But we must start by recognizing that returning to Ukraine's pre-2014 borders is an unrealistic objective.
You read that, by the way.
Chasing this illusionary goal will only prolong the war and cause more suffering. A durable peace for Ukraine must include robust security guarantees to ensure that the war will not begin again. This must not be Minsk 3.0. That said, the United States does not believe that NATO membership for Ukraine is a realistic outcome of a negotiated settlement. Instead, any security guarantee must be backed by capable European and non-European troops. If these troops are deployed as peacekeepers to Ukraine at any point, they should be deployed as part of a non-NATO mission, and they should not be covered under Article 5.
Now, that's a huge statement because those are the types of things that Russia does want, right? They do not want NATO and Ukraine to be buddies, and they don't want those troops to be in there. They want there to be a layer of separation there. Also, talking about Ukraine getting the pre-2014 borders back. That's talking about Crimea, for example, that has not been in their possession for many, many years. Of course, in all the other regions that have been taken here. Now, that's been described as a big change and kind of giving Russia everything they want. Of course, Russia wanted the whole thing. They went in there to try to get the entire country, not just the regions that they have. So they would not be getting what they want either. The remarks on Ukraine were a stark change from the stance on the Biden administration, from the Biden administration and many of Ukraine's closest allies who had declared that they would support Kyiv for as long as necessary and stress the importance of territorial integrity. His comments also suggested that Kyiv would have to abandon some of its key war aims, regaining territory from Russia and securing protection from future attacks through membership of the U.S.-led NATO military alliance. Now, most people I talk to kind of understand this, right? They're like, well, none of those things are really going to happen, right? It's realistic to just say them. It's the harsh reality about Ukraine. That's what we're talking about today. Pete Hegseth just said what everyone kind of knows. And that's true. Now, that's not without risk, that approach. You know, it's one thing for Pete to say it. You know, he used to be on The Blaze at the early years of what turned into The Blaze. He had a show here. You know, saying it on that show is one thing. Saying it as Secretary of Defense is another. And I mentioned, if you heard me saying that while he was talking, he read that. That was a written statement. He was reading it off a card. That was not, hey, this came up off the top of my head and I'm just kind of going. That's important to note. This is a message that the Trump administration is trying to send. And when they say it's not the same as the Biden administration, that's exactly the point. They're trying to shake this up because they know we're in the middle of this brutal stalemate that Trump wants done. And he's saying, get it done. Now, there can be problems with this. Noah Rothman points some of the potential risk out. He says, what's the harm in stating these truths out loud? For Western audiences accustomed to idle punditry, there is none. But public commenters and practitioners of statecraft serve distinct masters and have unique objectives. We can only hope they did not hear Hegseth throw his hands up in tacit acknowledgement that Vladimir Putin's adventurism has already redrawn the map of Europe by virtue of the facts on the ground. The West should not be in the business of legitimizing territorial expansionism via force of arms, not unless we want to see more of that sort of thing. Moreover, what precisely will we gain from such an admission? Likely not more than we would lose on balance. And that's not a crazy point. It is a somewhat risky approach to go this way. To be clear, all of these things need to be being said to Ukraine privately if it's not going to be publicly. This has to be the case. I've been saying this forever. This is where this thing's going to wind up with these types of borders. And while I don't think it's fair to Ukraine that they lose this territory, at the end of the day, what I want is this war to be over because it does have the risk of spiraling out of control and not just keeping Ukrainians in a state of danger, but everybody on Earth. And I want to avoid that. And I don't think we should necessarily be, you know, rewarding Russia by any means. But at the end of the day, we have to use our power of understanding reality to lead us to some sort of solution. Hundreds of thousands of people are dying here. This is a real thing that we want to get over. And if maybe the end of this is a situation where some of this territory is lost by Ukraine, maybe they get some of it back, some of it is lost. And then we work hard, you know, with Ukraine, with Europe, really, in coming up with a way to secure this so it doesn't happen again in the future. That seems to be a more sensible path forward. It's not a good path forward for Ukraine. It's not great for Russia either. I mean, they lost a lot of their people, and their war did not succeed. I mean, their idea was not to get a couple of regions. That was not what they were looking for there. So the question here is, did Trump do the right thing? And what's fascinating about this is both sides are already admitting, holy crap, we need to move right away. This could have happened a long time ago. And it should have happened a long time ago. These conversations should have been happening at least behind closed doors with Ukraine at the very latest after their offensive failed. We gave you some runway. We gave you a chance to try to push back. It didn't work. And now we're in a situation where you're pushing it back against a much bigger, much more difficult, much more well-equipped military and trying to take back territory that probably is never going to come back to you. Are we going to sit here and support that? Are we going to sit here and throw hundreds of billions of dollars and God knows how many lives at this effort? Or are we going to do what we can to try to stop it immediately? Donald Trump ran on the promise to try to stop it immediately. He succeeded in that election, and he is now trying to actually make that happen. That's where we are right now. There's so much more, but I want to get to Jay Johnson. He was arrested as part of the January 6th situation. He was pardoned by Donald Trump, and now he is going to, for whatever reason, lower himself to come on this program. That's coming up next. Anytime in life you have to make a big change, it can be hard. And this is especially true when you're planning to buy or sell a home. So that's a complicated process. You know, it is annoying. It's a lot of pressure. You're kind of stressed out about it. Am I going to get this extra money? Am I not? Am I going to have to pay too much? Am I going to be in the wrong school district? Am I going to do all this repair work that I don't really need to get done? You have all these questions going on, and you don't know what the answer is. Nobody does, except for real estate agents that do this stuff every day. But you can get some good ones, you get some bad ones when it comes to real estate agents. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is a service designed to get you to the good ones. That's what they do. They find you the top selling real estate agents in the area. They screen them. They make sure they're doing things the right way. And then they bring them to you. They do a little matchmaking, get together. And at the end of the day, everyone's happy. Well, this is the way it's designed, and it's the way it's worked for so many people in this audience. And it's also a free service to you. So why not take advantage of it? It's realestateagentsitrust.com. The name says it all. Realestateagentsitrust.com. All right, I'm very excited for this next segment, so bear with me here for a second. I want to start, before we get to our next guest, by giving you a version of a rant that I've given, I don't know, 30 times on the show over the past couple of years. This particular version is from, I think, 2 years ago. Watch. If he actually was attacking cops, I mean, he should go to prison. If not, you know, it seems like just a bizarre tale here. And all of his friends in Hollywood, of course, immediately abandoned him just for going to the rally. So that's where we stand. I find it to be a travesty, a sham, and a mockery. It's a trav-a-sham mockery. And Jay Johnston, I mean, the story of Everest, his work in the lie detector sketch just by itself should exonerate him from all crimes for at least a few more decades. That's my opinion. Free Jay Johnston. There you go. It's Jay Johnston. I'm very excited to welcome him. You know him from Bob's Burgers, Anchorman, and I don't know. For my formative years, maybe most importantly, Mr. Show. Thanks so much for coming on the program, Jay Johnston.
Hello, Stu. Thank you.
I'm so happy to have you on, and you have a legendary comedy career. I mentioned the lie detector sketch for a second, and let me just set this up for people who may not have watched every show, Mr. Show episode obsessively like I did. You are in that sketch surrounded by, like, you know, comedy legends. Bob Odenkirk, David Cross, Paul F. Tompkins, Brian Posehn.
And Jay Johnson.
And Jay Johnston, and you're there, and it's a great sketch, it's really funny, and then you come in with, have you ever taken a train and eaten it piece by piece, and completely steal that scene? I mean, like, you, It is a legendary performance. You're one of the most talented people I've ever seen. Maybe the most talented sketch artist, the comedy artist that I can remember. And I don't know, man. I'm just going to fawn over you for just a few moments.
Thank you very much. That's very, very kind.
Yeah.
Appreciate
so
it.
Let me take people back to the beginning, because I want to go back to the very beginning of this to set this up. You are you start off with Mr. Show. You're working on Mr. Show. This is a thing that goes into, you know, what turns into a huge cult classic and something that, you know, is very, very popular on HBO. Take mm-hmm. me back to that time. What's your relationship with the other comedians? What's it like going through that whole process?
Well, that was I had done Second City in Chicago shortly before I moved out to Los Angeles, and came out to Los Angeles with no prospects, really. You know, I didn't have my SAG card. I wasn't affiliated with the union, and you don't work if you are not in the union. So it's a bit of an arduous task to get the card. And I finally was able to do that. And kind of kicking around, looking at alternative comedy when it was sort of a new thing and people made a big deal out of it, decided I met Paul Tompkins. And actually Adam McKay, who works with Will Ferrell now, he introduced us, and I worked with Adam in Chicago a bunch. And so Paul and I clicked immediately. We put up a show, which actually turned out, you know, coincidentally to be kind of like Mr. Show in its format. It was a stage show, it was sketch comedy, and we would go to video segments and do live sketches and that type of thing, and it's all tied together. So I'd heard that Bob and David were doing a show, and I introduced myself to them and found out that their show was, or our show was similar to theirs, and they were starting Mr. Show the first season. And I got them to come to the show, and Bob said that if they get picked up, we'd be first in line as writers. So very excited, and I didn't believe them. it was like a year later before that happened, so I was quite shocked when it did happen. I saw the first few episodes of the show and did a little part or two, and was really impressed with it. And I thought, boy, that would be awesome to work on this show. So I was a fan.
So when you start off with the show, are you you know, do you have a well-formed worldview at this point? Are you a political person? I mean, the show obviously had lots of elements of satire politically, but it wasn't like an overtly political show.
Yeah. I would say Bob and David were mostly the political voice of that show. And myself personally, I was mute as far as politics concerned. So, you know, in my mind, it was just doing stuff that, you know, material that you would find funny, really. You know, they were kind of taskmasters about that. You would come in with pitches and maybe pitch 10 ideas, and maybe one of your ideas would end up in a transition from one scene to the next. So it was, it really ate up a lot of ideas, because they were very super duper picky, and that was difficult to do, but it was a good experience, certainly. I found that, Bob actually warned all of us new writers that this would probably be the last time that we would work on a show where the material was something that we enjoyed, because he'd worked on a bunch of shows, and SNL included, and he was basically saying that this experience was one where we got to do things that you wouldn't get to do anywhere else. And they really never gave us notes. HBO didn't. And it was really awesome, because a lot of times the studio will come down and say, don't do this, don't do that. That, you know, might offend somebody and whatever. But they didn't really do that for us at all. A joke I wrote was cut, but it was pretty offensive.
Yeah. For no. Well, I watched that show. It must have been very offensive if it got cut, that show.
Yeah, it was a little cuckoo.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So when you say you're politically mute, Right. Now, that's, of course, the safest place to be, at least until very recently. You were supposed to kind of shut up, particularly if you're on one side in particular. If you had those opinions, if you shut up, you can usually, you know, make it through. I don't know if it's not easy in Hollywood maybe to do that. But generally speaking, you can make it through your normal job if you just kind of shut up. Was it you just kind of shutting up, or was it just at the point where you were like, I don't really think that much about politics. I'm thinking about my career. I'm thinking about, you know, making jokes.
Yes, the latter precisely. That was all it was. It was a very narrow worldview and completely focused on the work. And that was it, really. You know, I really had no thought of politics until I had a child. And then that sort of happens naturally. You start thinking about, ooh, the world. She's going to be in the world someday. So then it started to hit me a bit.
Talk a little bit about that that process, because I mean I had kids too.
You mean having a child?
Yeah, like what do you do? Where do you put things? I'm trying to figure it out.
Basically, you put I don't want to be too specific, sure. But you know, you're with a girl, mm-hmm. and you put things. Here's what happens: mm-hmm. you disrobe, and so it was a trip because you know I was. Just working at that time and had a daughter who, you know, really opened my mind to the future of the world. You know, I never really thought past, you know, I mean, believe it or not, most actors are somewhat self-centered. I'll tell you that.
Really?
You know, it happens. I mean, occasionally. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's to broaden your horizons and to look beyond yourself and consider somebody else was somewhat of a new concept to me. So it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I began to, like, here's the best example. I had no idea about the entertainment industry being completely left. How I didn't know that, I have no idea. So one day I was talking with Dan Harmon and another friend of mine, Dino Stamatopoulos, a producer. And I just mentioned casually, you know, I'm thinking, you know, Trump, it was in 2016. I was like, Trump might be interesting because Hillary certainly isn't. And my mention of that, just a casual mention, Harmon just started screaming at me and like, blah, blah, blah. He's going on and on. And I was like, you know, you better cool it, man. Because he was really overboard, and that was my first entree into the world of you're an idiot if you are conservative or on the right or anything like that. And, you know, I wasn't like, you know, I'm not super right or anything. It's just that the present climate has, you know, if you aren't total lefty pants, then they push you into right-dom. So that's where I am.
What's your reaction to that moment, right? You bring up something, you're like thinking, you're considering voting for a particular candidate. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. It's an open secret that half the country votes one way and half of it votes the other way. We should, right? Like, we're kind of supposed to know that.
Yeah, and I was raised with the belief that you do not discuss politics or religion when you're, you know, in social situations. And realize I should have not said anything, I guess. But it also kind of galvanized my perspective on things because I thought, well, why is this guy causing such a furor among people who I've known for years? And why does that irritate them so much? And in Dan's case, he's a real, he will let you know what is on his mind. And he makes a big deal out of it. So I figured, well, he's just a special case. He's just way overboard. But turns out that a lot of people are, you know, and it's unfortunate. But, you know, like, especially in recent years, haven't had many political conversations with them.
Yeah, I can imagine. Did you ever find anyone in Hollywood that you kind of connected? I don't want you to out them because it'll ruin their career. But like, did you find people that like at least would be open to what you were saying or what you thought or anything other than just the kind of party line?
Yeah, I have since. But it was a long, arduous journey in order to find those people. And it's only been like two. So, I mean, it's pretty amazing. So very few and far between. But, you know, I don't know a lot of the people that perhaps share my sentiment or my perspective on things, because I have been out of the industry, officially blacklisted, as of 4 years ago. So,
well, I mean, they make I've seen so many movies about the 50s blacklist process. I'm sure your movie is coming a very sympathetic treatment of the way your career has been handled. I'm sure that's coming right around the corner.
That's right. The new Red Scare.
Yes. So it's 2016. You're thinking about Trump at that point. Trump obviously wins. We go through 4 years of Trump. And then 2020 is coming up. The election happens. And I'm
time for a riot.
Yeah, I feel like that. Yeah. That was your immediate reaction. You're like, you wanted to go to the Capitol and overthrow the government, right? Is that how that worked?
No. You know, it was a real disappointment. Of course, the election was. But you know, I went to a protest in D.C. To a rally. You know, to see him speak, and I was excited about that. And you know, exercise my First Amendment rights. I was in a protest that got a little hairy at times, but it was mostly boring. I mean, honestly, it was. I was just kind of walking around with my camera and, like, you know, videoing things, and not much to do. You know, just standing around and chanting a few chants and whatever. And then there were little pockets of violence here and there, and you know, I got caught inside. I never went in the Capitol. Which, that reminds me, I have to do that soon, bucket list, you know, so, but I was in the back, and there was this tunnel area that they, all of a sudden said, oh, that was the most violent. So I happened to be there, and it got a little, little violent, and, I didn't do any violence at all.
Well, hold on, Jay. Give me 1 second here, because I want to take a quick break. I want to come back and go through the specific things they asked you, they said, they accused you of. Because I found them to be immediately fascinating, the things that you did, these crimes, which some of which I wasn't even aware were crimes, but apparently are.
I don't even do most of them, so yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let me come back with you on the other side. It's Jay Johnston. He's a hardened criminal, but we'll give you the way this story turned out here in just a second. Back with Jay Johnston.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
All right, we're back with Jay Johnston of Mr. Show, Bob's Burgers, Anchorman, and so much more. Also, hardened criminal. We're going through his criminal history here. And I found it to be fascinating here, Jay. This is what they actually wrote about what you did at the Capitol. Again, you got how what was your actual sentence?
It was 1 year and 1 day.
1 year and 1 day in prison for the following. Let me bring this. It's from the police report. Quote, several members of the crowd joined together to push against police in a concerted movement. Johnston participated in this concerted movement and pushed along with other rioters for several seconds. Now, that is a shocking accusation. Could this possibly be true, Jay?
It is not true. I was, bravely trying to get my balance. I had my hands on the person in front of me trying to stand up because the crush was coming and everyone was off balance, you know. You couldn't get out of there. So, you know, I was not there. Person in front of me, I think, was maybe fighting with the police, or one in front of him was fighting, but I was very close to it, but, you know, I didn't do any violence or anything. As a matter of fact, I was just concerned with getting out of there. I would say most of the people in that tunnel were wanting to get out of there because there was a lot of, you know, screams and people panicking and, you know, women crying. I'm sure some men were crying too, but quietly. I ended up just kind of ducking down, and I saw a taser zip by my knee, one of those little barb things on the wire, And I was like, I got to get out of here now. So I just like pushed people's knees and hips low and just made it out that way.
Yeah. I was in the French Quarter this past weekend. And it's like when you're in a crowd like that, you don't participate in it. You're just in it. Whatever the hell is going on, you're involved
you
in
hope
it.
The unimind, the unimind of the crowd has good intentions, you hope.
Right.
Yeah,
you hope. Exactly. You hope. And usually in the French Quarter, they don't. Let me give you this, because this they have got footage of this, Jay, and I want you to answer for it. This is shocking. This is shocking. Oh. Approximately 3:05 p.m., CCTV shows that Johnston was handed a bottle of water by another rioter. Johnston then handed that bottle of water to a third rioter who used it to wash his eyes out. Johnston then assisted at least three other rioters by pouring the water on the rioters' faces. Answer
That's right.
for your crimes.
Well, I also fixed their hair a bit because they were a little... but yeah, they were kind of bashed in a little bit, bloodied and whatever, but it had mace or pepper spray. So they were appreciative of the water, but I didn't realize it was a crime at that point. It still doesn't seem like one right now. So, so it was characterized that I was, had these big plans as I approached the tunnel entrance, that I was going in there to bring other rioters up in there to fight, and I was going in there to fight and all that type of stuff. They took every step. I mean, the whole thing was on video. I mean, there wasn't a moment I wasn't in somebody's, view of a camera. So, they took every movement I made and characterized it as, villainous. So... it was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, they talk about you taking a shield as well, a police shield. Did you steal a shield from a police officer? Did that happen?
No, I did not. I thought that they were holding on to him pretty well, so I didn't want to try and get that. It was passed to me, and I was looking over somewhere, and it hit me in the shoulder, and I turned, and it was in my hands, and I was like, whoa. I do not want a police shield. I don't want this, and it's not mine, and it obviously came from the police, so I handed it back to him.
So all this goes on, and I remember a few days after January 6th, everyone's posting pictures trying to identify all the, mainly grandmotherly heathens that had orchestrated this tyranny, and there's a picture of you, and people are tossing it around, and like, it looks like Jay Johnston from Mr. Show, and that does not at all connect to me at that point, because I'm thinking, he's Jay Johnston, he's a Hollywood comedian, right? Like, there's no way he would be at this rally.
What an unfortunate doppelganger.
Yeah, doppelganger. That's what you should have gone with at the time.
Yes.
So you are there, and people find out you're there. You start text messaging. Some of your text messages have been released on that front where you're saying, yeah, I was there. What are your friends? I mean, your friends have known you for years and years and years and years. These are people who you've worked with that know you super well. They know that you're not a violent person, I would assume. I don't know all your actions in the background.
Well,
we don't know.
Now, that experience changed their minds,
It did.
Right? When they saw that on TV, they were like, ah, yes, he is a terrorist. Of course.
That's kind of what happened, though, right?
Here.
You joke, but that's kind of what happened.
Yeah. It was it's unbelievable. I mean, I had texted a friend of mine, and he relayed the information to another friend of ours who was actually a closer friend. And that close friend texted me with sort of digging for information, like, oh, so you're at the Capitol. Well, what's it like? What happened? And, I said... it was in the papers, whatever, about it being not violent, and then it was violent, and it was untastic. So I mean, I made
untastic,
a joke,
which is a great joke.
Yeah, and then they like used that in court and everything, and in articles, it was quite silly. I was like, it's me joking. I mean, I don't know, but. Anyway, so this was a close friend of mine who totally ratted me out and snitched and everything, and a real bummer. Everybody just turned their backs on me.
There wasn't anyone who was like, gosh, man, I don't know what the heck you were doing there, but like, tell me what happened. Like, help me understand. There wasn't any of that that came from your long-term friends?
Maybe in the future there might be some. No, there was nobody.
the optimism isn't real on that one.
Nope.
Did you? Okay, so did that shock you?
Well, as Betty Davis once said, behind all the fake tinsel of Hollywood is real tinsel.
Mm.
So that's my friend base is people who are real tinsel.
Yeah.
I was quite dismayed, and you know, it was just like the media just needed to give a little push, and then I was you know, public enemy number one and a pariah. So after I was fired from Bob's Burgers, which I did for like 11 years, you know, they didn't even call me. I found out through articles, you know, and called my agent. I was like, so did you see this stuff about me being fired? Is that for real? And she was like, well, we don't know, but we're firing you. So that was that. And
wow.
That was, yeah.
Even the people you pay wouldn't even listen to your story.
My money was no good. But of course, they're still getting paid.
Oh,
so
luckily for them.
Yeah, luckily.
Yeah, that's great. That's great news. That's great news. So, what's life like at this point? I mean, if your friends ever abandon you, you're at this point not working at all. This is the most pathetic question ever. But what does that feel like? Well, was it wonderful?
No,
was it fantastic? How did it feel?
You know, unemployment is its own reward, isn't it? It's not so wonderful because, you know, that's like my career of choice. Right now I'm, you know, doing handyman work and whatever, odd jobs. And the odder the better. That's my motto. But it's been really tough because people who are perhaps, you know, sympathetic or right-leaning, who may like to, you know, say, hey, do this project or whatever with us, they can't because the powers that be above them would say no ixnay on that, you know. And it's like my daughter, who's special needs, a couple years ago in the summer, we were doing a signed her up for this theater workshop in Hollywood. And it was this little thing where, you know, she gets to go on stage and be a part of this kids theater group and stuff. And it was really cool. And a couple weeks into it, the director of the little workshop called me and said, your family's not welcome here anymore. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he said, well, I guess one of the parents recognized you. And, you know, we're funded by the Koch brothers, and they found out, and our funding's gone if we don't kick you out. So that was a little difficult to deal with. And we've seen that a couple times, you know, and for it to filter down into affecting my daughter is totally unacceptable. So, you know, not to bring it down a notch, but I'll tell you that the people out here are a real treat.
Yeah. Well, now that you've ruined the whole upbeat tone of this interview, Jay, let's end it on a positive here, because obviously this.
Well, I'll tell you. Here's a positive I can say real quick.
Please do.
When things were really tough for us, my family, Patriot Freedom Project is a charity that helped us out tremendously, and they're doing great work for J6ers. And I want to mention it because, you know, the pardons were really not the end for a lot of people. They're in jail and they just get out and they're starting all over. So PatriotFreedomProject.com is doing great work to help them find jobs and housing and that type of thing. So
yeah, that's
actually Trump endorsed charity for J6ers too. So
okay, yes. Yeah, so definitely get involved with them. Patriot Freedom Project. You of course did get pardoned from by Donald Trump. Did your case also get dismissed? I was a little confused on the details on that.
Yeah, I was too. It did actually. The day after it was, I found out it was dismissed, which means that that felony is not on my record anymore. So that's wonderful. That's great. So as long as they don't see this, they'll never know.
I'm pretty sure they don't watch. So I would assume then this leads to you're right back in the swing of things with all the same shows.
Yeah, I don't know if you can hear the knocking in the background. That's people at my door with job opportunities. Yeah. It turns out the Hollywood industry is also a bit skittish, and they're not ready to turn around and say, oh, welcome me back with open arms. So we'll see what happens. But
it's a stunning development. Jay, for the small percentage of my audience that does not own a major studio and could not offer you a role, what's the best way for people to follow you, to see what you're getting involved in and to support you?
It would be through my fiance's X account. Sorry, I'm an old-fashioned gentleman. I don't have social media because it would have been not good for me. They would have used that against me. But the X handle is at, what the hell is it? Some kind of kid thing. Let me see. What does it say? Sarah, tell me. It's cats meow. That's what it is. Cats _ meow with 3 W's.
Cat.
Now, we chose that handle because it's important that people know that I'm a cat person.
Right.
I don't know. It wasn't my choice.
It's perfect. No. It's perfect, Jay. Yeah. And I will tell you, as a person who does have social media, you shouldn't worry. It's been all positive things about you the entire time.
I hope so.
Yeah. 100% positive. All right, Jay Johnson, it's been a true honor, man. It's weird seeing you and talking to you on the screen. I've watched you so many times.
You're weird too. Thank you.
Yeah, you've been watching me through the window. I've seen you out there a few times, so it's
Free Jay Johnson. Thank you very much.
Free Jay Johnson. Seriously, we tried to make it into a thing. I'm sure it's what really got the case dismissed.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jay Johnson. Thanks for coming on the program. We'll talk to you soon.
Great.
Well, RFK Jr. was confirmed as health secretary. A couple things on this. Number one, you may know that I'm not a big RFK Jr. fan. I don't think he will be a great health and human services secretary. That being said, I apply the test to RFK Jr. that I apply to everybody else. And that is, I will try to judge your performance before you get a job. But once you get the job, we just kind of judge your job performance, right? Like, we don't have to predict anymore. We don't need to project anymore. We're just going to look at what he does, and we'll judge the things he does, and we'll see if they're good or bad. Hopefully they're good. You know, and there's certainly a lot of things that he believes in that I'm totally fine with or emphatically support. So I hope he does all of those and doesn't do all the things I'm not in favor of. We can only hope at this point. He's got the gig. So RFK Jr., what an incredible transition, right? Like, a guy, you know, again, he was running against Donald Trump not too long ago, winds up becoming buddies with him, and now running with him in this sort of Make America Healthy Again thing. And who knows? We were going to see some results from that. Another person who was kind of an enemy, we forget about this, was Elon Musk. Now, Musk at the time didn't own Twitter, right, when this happened, but there was an ongoing lawsuit between Trump and Twitter/X because Trump was suing him for taking him off after January 6th. Well, Musk is now settling that lawsuit. He's paying $10 million to Donald Trump, which is weird. They've been like best friends for a while here, and now there's still a lawsuit going on. But that's now over $10 million going to Donald Trump, who's a wealthy man and probably won't even notice it. It's amazing because I would notice the $10 million difference. He probably won't even notice it. Finally, Kamala Harris is the Democratic frontrunner for California. I looked at this list of people that they have on. It's an embarrassment. She's at 57% of the vote, though. So by far the favorite for the Democrats. And honestly, she probably will just win because California is what California is. That being said, if you ever wanted a chance at an actual Republican getting the job, please, please run Kamala Harris. We've got stuff for you to watch here on Blaze TV. The latest episode of Matt Kibbe's documentary series, The Cover-Up, is here. Yes, it is. It's a very, very exciting cover-up. We're covering up The Cover-Up. This is about Fauci. If you haven't watched this series at all, you can watch episode 4 now, The Cover-Up, Smoking Gun, on Blaze TV, which is out now. You can become a subscriber at FauciCoverUp.com/Stu. Use the code SMOKINGGUN to get $30 off your subscription right now. It's been a great series by Matt, really going through the entire saga of COVID and Fauci's involvement in all of it. FauciCoverUp.com/Stu. The code SMOKINGGUN. Get $30 off your subscription. FauciCoverUp.com. The code is Smoking Gun. Go check it out now. $30 off